Hello and welcome to Connections. I'm Bill Newell, along with this guy, Rick Moore. Rick, how are you this morning?
Hello there. Well, I'm here, Bill. How are you?
Good. I'm good. Another great Friday, but man, it looks like we're going to have a fantastic weekend. We'll take it. We'll get through today. That's just like we've got through the other 45 days, the last 45 days,
no.
Somehow or other.
Yeah, I mean, we're into May. I mean, and, you know, so the next target date is, what, 2 weeks from Monday? We'll make it. We'll be okay.
That's right. We should be fine. We got a great show today, by the way. Some of our guests, we got Lisa Dana, Dr. Lisa Dana, the superintendent of schools in Danvers, Diana DeSaglio, who is a state senator up in Newburyport, and then her district wraps around 495 down to Haverhill, Methuen, and so on. I think she lives in Methuen. So we got her coming up, and we also will talk with Beth Cassoni from the Mass Lobstermen Association. And Rick, we have another guest as well, Sue Wheeler.
Yeah, we'll be talking with Sue. She has a boutique and art gallery in Magnolia on Lexington Avenue, and they're open for curbside pickup and so on. It's quite a unique place, and I think you'll enjoy listening to Sue.
That is great. We do have links up on our website to all of those guests here on our here on the post here today, so do check that out. Rick, I have a couple of notes here. This is not a sports show, but there's nothing more all-American than baseball, and everyone cares about baseball. And I saw the news yesterday where the Little League canceled their World Series, which is probably a classic event that's been going on for, oh man, lots of years, I should know, since 1947, actually. But Mike Alonji, the Item Sports Editor, wrote a story today. And, he talked to some Little League officials here on the North Shore. But apparently, as of now anyway, the local Little League season is still on. They haven't postponed that yet. What is postponed is their travel to the National Little League World Series.
Yeah, that's too bad. And, I think we're all keeping our fingers crossed that we can have summer activities as usual, because it just isn't, I don't think it's healthy. It's certainly not normal, but I don't think it's healthy either to have kids not involved in these activities. As much as I'm not a fan of some of these overboard activities, I do think it'll be great to get stuff back out there. So I'm thinking it's going to be okay, but, what do I know?
What do we all both know? Even if we put it together, what do we both know together? It's not that impressive. Rick, what else is on your mind?
Well, a couple of things. I do want to mention the class of 2020. We have put together a series of interviews with the class of 2020, starting off with the captains of the high school sports teams. They're all seniors, of course, and we've done four or five of these already. They're all up on the website. The kids are spectacular. They're fantastic. The directors of athletic have been tremendous in putting these together and, of course, supporting the kids. But also, there's a story today in the Newburyport Daily News. We talked with the Triton superintendent of schools, Brian Forgett, last week. And a very quick story on about, excuse me, in a normal school year. This is from the Newburyport Daily News. I think I mentioned that. A pair of Triton Regional High School seniors are called down to the main office in April to be told they're the class valedictorian and salutatorian. But, of course, that hasn't happened. Since classes at school have been canceled, a rolling rally of local police and fire vehicles led a roughly 30-vehicle parade of well-wishers past the homes of class of 2020 valedictorian Jamie Bell and salutatorian Tyler Godfrey on Wednesday morning. And this is in the Triton Regional School District, so it covered the towns of Salisbury, Newbury, and Raleigh. Fire trucks and police vehicles from all of those towns, with about 20 Triton teachers, participated in the parade. So congratulations to those two young people.
I didn't know anything good could happen when you got called down to the principal's office. All right, whatever. Fine.
Never happened to me. All those years as a teacher, nope.
And joining us at this time is Dr. Lisa Dana, superintendent of schools in Danvers. And Dr. Dana, thanks so much for taking some time to join us today.
Thank you.
The question to lead off with is the COVID-19 or coronavirus response in the Danvers Public Schools. I know you. If I ask you that general question, you could probably talk for 30 minutes, but what would you say about the response in Danvers?
Thank you. We've been using a couple words to really talk about our focus with our response to the COVID-19 and the school closures. And that would be flexibility and collaboration. So one of our core values of collaboration, continuing with that strong foundation, having everyone work together. And then flexibility, that from day to day, some of it is unknown with different regulations and updates from our governor and our Department of Education. So that flexibility as we learn to do remote learning from something that happened very quickly for us to all get used to doing. So our focus has remained on our core academic areas in social emotional learning. We're emphasizing that hopefully all of our students are reading every day, and really want to say that we are so appreciative of our community, the Damas community, our school community, that everyone has come together. We have our families, our parents are overseeing the education along with our teachers that are providing access to many of the remote learning opportunities, our faculty and the administrators who have come together, our school committee, our unions. There are so many people, food services, our DPW, our school resource officers, and the town leadership. So lots of people to be thankful for the collaboration and their dedication over the past few weeks in supporting all of our students.
Rick, I didn't know if you had any.
Yeah, Dr. Dana, I'm just wondering, there are so many needs for staff as well. How does that work from K up to the high school? I'm guessing staff probably goes through the principals and they have some manner of support, because there must be new questions that come up, if not every day, then at least every week.
Thank you. We do have our administrative team at our seven principals along with our curriculum center. So in our curriculum center, our assistant superintendent for teaching and learning, Mary Wormers, has three curriculum directors, one at each level, and some at the elementary level, a math and a ELA coach that support the teachers also. So they really have been working as a team in supporting our faculty along with our other administrators, from student services to the technologies, from Keith Taverner, our other assistant superintendent, who really does a lot of the logistics and human resources pieces too, to support all of our faculty. But with that, yes, we've been having virtual grade level meetings and faculty meetings and daily communications with teachers and all of our support staff, so that way everyone has the resources they need to be able to be most effective in the remote learning.
You had all of this dumped on you all of a sudden. I could probably create some analogies here which would not work, but anyway, you have this all dumped on you. As you said, you're dealing with so much here, but I have to think, coming down the home stretch here, May on into June, what are some tweaks or what are some things that you're looking as a district to do, and school by school as well, to try to close out the year?
Thank you. We have looked at this as phases. So phase one was that beginning of, we have a two-week closure. What is this going to look like? And then as the governor extended that through May 4th, we went into phase two. So that phase two, we really did learn all of our pieces to make sure that we had a variety of remote learning activities, assignments, and with that, now, as you said, sort of that home stretch, we really are about halfway through about 7 weeks of remote learning and what we've learned through that process. So we will now, through May 4th through June 18th, which is our last day of school for the town of Damas, we will be strengthening. The Commissioner of Education put out guidance at the end of last week that really spoke about prioritizing our work, what can we really get accomplished, and what's the most important for student learning. Part of that is continuing with the connections. That's so important that we have consistent engagement for all of our students, and that means that we have multiple ways that students can access the learning activities, and that may be live pieces through like a Google Meet with our teachers and students. The teachers are recording videos. They're putting up interactive types of activities for our students. And then we also use Google Classroom, which is our communication system with our students. And I think finally the piece is those weekly communications with our families. So that way we are streamlining communications, just overwhelming the amount of information going back and forth and sharing. So we're really trying to make that a consistent and streamlined way to be able to communicate with our families. I'll add one other piece is that our website has all of this information. So we continue to keep updating our website with a FAQ and as we continue through each phase with any emails that we send to our parents are listed there that the entire community can take a look at that.
You touched on support services. Is there anything else you want to mention? Because I know that you have to supply meals in one way or another to the kids. And how is all that working out?
Thank you. There are a couple pieces there. The first with the meals, and we have just an amazing food service staff. Our director, Tom Powers, has been leading this work. He has a core staff of about four of our food service staff members that are coming in and making lunches every morning on Thursdays and Fridays. They're putting multiple lunches together, so our families have lunches over the weekend also. That has our average has been about 950 lunches over a course of a week. And we've also worked with the town, so it's not only our families and school children, but it's also any member of our Damas community that needs a lunch. We want to thank them for their consistent really going above and beyond with the lunch program. And we have volunteers through our town employees and the school employees that are delivering the lunches on a daily basis also. Along with lunches, it came that piece with technology. Our 6 through 12 students all have a Chromebook as part of what we do in Danvis. So they had their Chromebooks, but if something is not working, we're helping the families to get those Chromebooks back up and running for students. I want to emphasize remote learning is not all about just being on the Chromebook, but that is the way that we are communicating with Google Classroom, and that's where all the information is located to start with. So working with our elementary families that needed to borrow a Chromebook from our elementary schools, our technology staff has been working on that on a weekly basis with families that need a Chromebook. So we probably have loaned about 300 Chromebooks to families in the Danvis community. And then I think the last piece is, I spoke about earlier, the social-emotional pieces. We have our social workers, our nurses, our administrators. We have support teams at every school that when we've been in our school building, they would be the team that would reach out and work with if a teacher noticed that in working with a family or a child needed additional support. So those are all happening virtually also. So through emails and phone calls and check-in with families that we really want to make sure that we have checked in with every family in Danvis.
Is there an interesting story or a unique story from a school or one of, you know, I'm familiar with the middle and high schools more than than all the elementaries in Danvers, but I see photos around from time to time of teachers and students or, you know, teachers doing certain things to draw attention to the lessons and so on. Any unique stories out of Danvers to share?
Would say maybe not so much as one unique story, but I think an overall theme that I'm seeing is the piece where our schools are finding ways to continue those motivating ways, and it really has been through videos, of continuing to connect with students. So our middle school over the last couple of weeks has started virtual spirit type of weeks and so involving students and staff to do that at all of our elementary schools. And it has worked in different ways. So whether it's been a reading TikTok or a video on a Friday dance video that one elementary school has put together. So I think that's the trend and the consistent piece that has maybe we can say is unique, but that our faculty are finding ways to have those ways that put smiles on everyone's faces in the midst of everything and in the stress and anxiety of having a school closure and being amongst this healthcare pandemic.
Finally, I guess, through this experience, how do you think education will change in Danvers moving forward? If we go back to this new normal in September, will what we're doing now, will that it all transfer to the new normal, if you will, in education?
I think it will. I am always hopeful and will always say, sort of my glass is that always half full in the piece of that we're going to find positives through this. One of them is we know how to use technology much better now, from the superintendent to elementary teachers, and every staff member is using technology, and they've learned in these first 7 weeks, and then we'll get better at using them in the next 7 weeks. We've all learned how to use technology in a supportive way. So we will see that. And then I think it will also help us to really prioritize what's really most important in education. So what traditions that we kept and had to do virtually because they were real important, and what are some things that we can see now that needed to change. So I think those will be part of our new normal over the course of the next school year.
You know, I close, I was thinking, I have a little good news for you, Superintendent, is that let's say Monday we get a foot of snow. You don't have to cancel school, right? There's no reason to cancel school.
That is true. So although I have had, you're right, less of those early morning wake-up calls because of snow, it has been very different this year. So that is one positive. No more snow calls for this year.
And I know you would trade snow calls and early wake-up calls in a heartbeat so you wouldn't have to go through what you've all gone through. I get that piece. And so you can still, no matter what, June 18th is the day to get out of school in Danvers. Yeah.
That is, yes.
Well, Superintendent, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for your time, and be safe, and congrats on all the hard work everyone's doing there in Danvers.
Thank you very much, and the same to you, and we appreciate that you asked us for this interview so we could share what was happening in Danvers. Take care.
Yeah, you got it. Dr. Lisa Dana, Superintendent of Schools in Danvers. Just ahead, State Senator Diana DeSaglio will be joining us, as well as Beth Carsoni from the Mass Lobstermen Association and Sue Wheeler from Arts Abound. Just ahead here on Connections. A daily news podcast for the North Shore, North Shore Today. North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, as we keep you connected with the North Shore. State Senator Diana DeSaglio is joining us. And Senator, welcome. Thanks for taking a few minutes to join us on the line today.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill. It's a pleasure to be here.
The State House, the Senate, I know that all of you legislators have been very, very busy in the last several weeks, but tell me what's the latest news from the State House as you're hearing it.
Well, for me, I served as the chair of the Community Development and Small Business Committee, and most of the work that I've been doing has had to do with the economic impact of the COVID-19 emergency right now. I do serve on other subcommittees regarding PPE and public safety. But again, as a chair, most of the stuff that I've been working on has had to do with the economic impact. And I can tell you that we've been trying to make sure in the legislature right now that our efforts are coordinated with the work that's being done at the federal level so that we can fill some of the gaps that need to be filled after the federal funding priorities have been met, and make sure that our systems are up and running to be able to handle the changes that are taking place at the federal and the state level. Recently, as many of you might have noticed, the pandemic unemployment assistance that was passed in the Federal CARES Act was just recently able to be accessed in Massachusetts, and kudos to the administration on getting that up and running 10 days ahead of schedule, because previous to that, we were having issues and challenges across in Merrimack Valley, at least, and across Massachusetts, with gig workers, 1099 workers, self-employed, nonprofits being able to access their unemployment. So that is something that just happened recently. And as many of you also have seen, the governor did just come out and say that the reopening of many of our local businesses, he's setting a new date of May 18th, and has pushed that up as sort of a new beacon to look to, but of course has also cautioned that he is waiting to make sure that there is a steady decline of COVID-19 cases that are examined as we move closer to that date as well for the reopening of our small business community. Aside from that, we have been working on issues pertaining to loan and grant programs for our small businesses. Paycheck Protection Program is one of the things that many of our small businesses have been applying for at the federal level. It's a loan-to-grant program. But what we found in the processing of the grant applications has been that many of the small businesses that are applying for these loan-to-grant opportunities have actually been deemed ineligible or can't get access to the grant opportunity portion of it because they can't meet the requirements that the feds have put on that loan-to-grant program, requirements such as bringing back all of their employees that they had pre-COVID-19 emergency and staffing at the same level is a requirement, but yet many of these businesses are shut down, so they find that nearly impossible. So we're trying to help these businesses navigate that issue and working with our federal partners on addressing that to hopefully get those issues remedied there. But simultaneously, I filed a bill to create a state paycheck protection program, which is geared towards helping those small businesses who find themselves currently ineligible for the federal loan-to-grant program. And there will be a hearing on that Tuesday, May 5th at 11 a.m. It will be streamed live on my Facebook. So if anybody's interested in that, feel free to go on. If you're interested in testifying to help that bill pass, you can also contact my office at Diana.Zoglio@MUSenate.gov. There are a lot of other things in the works, though, Bill, but I'll let you go ahead and ask another question if you'd like to, because I could keep going, clearly.
No, I hear you. Hey, I know this week the governor announced his advisory board that is going to be advising him on reopening. And as chair of community development and small businesses, I mean, what are your thoughts on small businesses and the devastation that they're feeling here with all of this, with the shutdown and so on? What any specific stories?
I'm going to say that the biggest challenge that they've been facing is with not knowing when they're going to be able to start doing business and in what capacity they're going to be able to start doing business. You know, communication has been the number one request from them. Communication and transparency. And, you know, I hear them on this, you know. I mean, as much as the administration is doing a great job in navigating unprecedented circumstances right now, I do think that we could do better in transparency and in communication with these small business owners who want to know, you know, a little bit more detail about what the plan is going to be come May 18th or come whatever day they're going to start reopening. Will they have to social, you know, will there be social distancing? Will there be certain requirements by DPH? What's that going to look like? Because they want to start preparing to make sure that as soon as they're able to get back into business, they're able to get back into business. So I don't blame them for that. And we've been advocating for more transparency in the process and more communication from the administration. And I'm optimistic that that is, you know, hopefully going to be the case moving forward, that those businesses will get the communication that they so deserve.
Tell me about the bill that you filed this week. It is in regards to financial relief for veterans, the emergency veteran relief bill. Tell me more about that one.
Yeah, so what's happening is our municipalities actually chip in 25% of Chapter 115 benefits that go towards our veteran population that might be struggling financially or otherwise. You know, talking about our disabled veteran community, our elderly veteran population, so on and so forth. And obviously we know revenues are down right now across the board, federal, state, municipal. So I filed this bill to provide an assist, so to speak, to both our veteran population and our municipalities during this time when some of my mayors are telling me that they have seen a tremendous amount of new applications come in for Chapter 115 benefits for our local veterans who find themselves, like many, many people across our region, in very dire financial circumstances that's new to them. So the same influx in those veterans applying for their Chapter 115 benefits, which they're entitled to. And what's happening is our local VSOs, you know, don't necessarily have the technology and capability to be able to process all of these new applications that are coming in at this time. Social distancing requirements have made things a little bit more difficult, especially when it comes to the disabled and to some of the elderly who need those services and those benefits. So this has created a grant program to be administered by the Secretary of Veterans Services, Secretary Urena, actually. He's actually a Merrimack Valley native. He would be the one to administer these grants through DVS. And this is a piece of legislation that was modeled after a bill that was filed and passed in Minnesota, and is geared towards assisting those veterans in need by supplementing Chapter 115 benefits right now during the COVID-19 emergency for those who have been impacted financially speaking.
Well, Diana, I know your district. I'm sure you drive 495 a lot, knowing your district, looking at it here.
But all the time.
you're up in Newburyport.
Yeah, my house is right off of 495, and I mean, that's, I drive it all day long, trying to adhere to the speed limit. Very easy to speed on 495, so.
Yeah, you got Salisbury, Newburyport, Amesbury, Merrimack, Haverhill, Methuen, all the way down to North Andover, all on that 495 northern end of that belt there. Any unique stories at all from any of your cities or towns that that you represent, Diana?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I've just been so proud of the residents of the Merrimack Valley for pulling together during this tumultuous time. The stories of, you know, mothers and daughters and sons and fathers getting together and sewing masks for their, you know, communities, donating supplies, donating their time, helping the elderly in their neighborhoods. You know, I mean, obviously we have unique stories here to us in each community, but I would say that that's actually been happening around the entire community here in the Merrimack Valley, my entire district. So I've just been incredibly proud of everybody for pulling together. Each community, you know, Methuen, for example, set up Methuen Cares. The mayor actually coordinated with a bunch of volunteers here in the community and set up a donation program to help those that are struggling and those in need across the board. Haverhill just set up a similar effort. So the region is really pulling together and getting really creative in how to help one another. And it's just been truly inspiring. And I'm just so thankful to have been born and raised in the Merrimack Valley and to be able to serve this amazing community.
Great. Well, Diana, anything else that you want to share with us, whether it be State House related or district related or some other news to share with us here?
Yeah, I would just actually request, I know I already mentioned it very briefly, but I do have a hearing that I am chairing on Tuesday, May 5th at 11 a.m. Contact my office, please, if you'd like to testify at that hearing. We're going to be hearing two bills that I filed. One is on the Paycheck Protection Program being expanded to businesses who are ineligible for those federal loans grant programs. And then the other bill is actually an act to support mask makers. It's a very comprehensive bill to help our small business community. But I'll just highlight one important aspect of that mask makers bill is that it creates a one-stop shop web portal for our small business community to be able to interact not only with each other and to make sure they can find resources for themselves and information about government regulations and whatever they need as far as COVID is concerned, but it also would create an interactive network and database that would connect consumers with the small business community. Because we know, though, right now that what people are doing because these businesses are closed is they're going online, they're Google searching whatever they need to purchase, and then they're going most likely to Amazon.com and sending their hard-earned dollars out of state. And that's taking a lot of revenue away from our neighbors who own small businesses and employ people right here in our communities. And these guys are really, really struggling right now. So the app to support mask makers would create that interactive web portal to connect local consumers who want to shop local with their local producers and manufacturers and retailers to make sure that we are doing everything we can to keep business local. So those two very important bills will be heard this upcoming Tuesday, May 5th at 11. Give me a shout if you'd like to participate or if you just want to talk about an issue of concern to you. Diana.Gisaglio@masenate.gov. And my phone number is 978 984-7747. You can also follow me on Twitter, on Facebook, or on Instagram. And I thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, that is some great information, and you're absolutely right about identifying and trying to, you know, have people buy local. They just can't do it sometimes. I get it. Like you're right. It's so easy to jump onto Amazon, but it would be nice to have the alternative. And that would be a good thing moving forward, to be able to establish that as well moving forward once we get back to some kind of new normal, I suppose, too, for sure. Yeah.
I agree. So please pass the word on, and we'll hope to get this legislation passed quickly.
Well, Diana, Senator DeSaglio, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for your time, and best of luck. Stay safe.
Thanks so much. We'll talk to you soon. Stay safe and stay healthy.
Yep. Thank you. That is State Senator Diana DeSaglio here on Connections. Right after this break, Beth Carsoni will be joining us from the Mass Lobstermen Association. A lot of information that she has for us, so hang in there for that. We'll be right back ahead here on Connections. A daily news podcast for the North Shore, North Shore Today. North Shore Sports Night, Monday nights at 7, as we keep you connected with the North Shore. Connections continues, and we are joined by Beth Carsoni, the executive director of the Massachusetts Lobstermen Association. And Beth, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Bill, for having me and reaching out to talk about the commercial lobster industry here in Massachusetts and what we're doing during these uncertain times.
We will have a link up on our website as to your organization and so on. But I wanted to, you know, I know a couple of lobstermen, and I talked to one of them, and I got the impression that through the coronavirus, the COVID-19 thing, they're not in a rush to get out there. But yet I know there are a lot of fishermen that must be out there at this point.
That's correct. And, you know, having talked to probably in the past month at least 400 or 500 commercial lobstermen directly, there is definitely not the rush to go out and set their gear. But now I'm hearing from seafood dealers that markets have started to open up overseas, which is a good sign for us that we may be on that trajectory. And the fishermen that have been fishing right along, because there's, you know, several hundred fishermen that fish throughout the year, they have been creative in their ways of selling their lobsters direct to the public. The Massachusetts Division of Marine Fisheries has been great to work with. They have waived a fee for the fishermen to procure a permit which allows them to sell direct, and that's a great benefit. So I know there's been some great interest up in the Cape Ann area, down on the South Coast in Fairhaven, New Bedford, and in the Boston, Quincy area. So as the weather gets warmer and the fleets get active, there's going to be a lot more lobsters being landed. And just yesterday, the Division of Marine Fisheries launched a video describing, explaining the sustainability and how to access locally harvested seafood. And with these uncertain times with the meat processing plants in the Midwest possibly coming offline and, you know, access to protein, we in New England have access to clean protein right here at our shores, and what better way to support your local businesses than to support a local lobsterman or fisherman, because they are businessmen.
How can you share more on that information about how to access the locally produced lobster or fish?
Absolutely. We're going to be putting a link up on our website, lobstermen.com, which will bring you to the Division of Marine Fisheries. And there is a list of all the local seafood dealers, markets, fishermen that sell direct, and phone numbers, because a lot of them don't have, you know, you have to call ahead. It's curbside delivery. All the COVID-19 precautions are in place. And it's been very well received in a lot of the areas. And, you know, quite frankly, most of the seafood that is consumed in the United States, it is in restaurants. And right now, I think it's 70%, the state said, right now with the restaurants being closed through May 18th, these, you know, all the seafood that's being landed, whether it's scallops or lobster or ground fish, they have no real direct markets to us. And what better way to support local businesses and also obtain clean protein?
But I think you're right about the, well, I know you're right because you, I believe you, with the amount of seafood that restaurants do buy, especially in our area. But because I saw an interesting data point a couple of weeks ago where it was regarding bacon. Like 80 or 75% of all bacon is served in restaurants. And that doesn't surprise me either. You know what I mean? So it's a very, similar. Yeah.
We love bacon wrapped in scallops.
Oh, man, that is my favorite. Absolutely, yeah.
I think that's everyone's favorite.
How I would love to see you guys team up with the scallops and the bacon, and let's make this happen, yeah.
We will, definitely. No, it's definitely been some trying times for everyone, and hopefully we're on the trajectory to getting back to whatever the normal is going to be for us going ahead.
Yeah, there'll be a new normal for sure. But, you know, in one regard, every business has to take precautions in this new environment. And that's a given. But, I mean, if you're out on a lobster boat, you're pretty well isolated from a lot of people. You have some pretty good distance out there, yeah.
Yeah, you do. But you still have to deal with crew and bait dealers and lobster dealers. And you still have to interact with people. They're not that isolated.
No, I hear you. And as soon as those words came out of my mouth, exactly, yeah. tell me more about your organization. You know, if it weren't for what the times that we're in today, tell me about the focus of the Mass Lobstermen Association.
Right now, we really haven't slowed down at all. If anything, we've ramped up with all this pandemic and working for a commercial fishing organization where fishermen are deemed essential because they're food producers. We have had a flurry of calls come in and emails and inquiries regarding all this SBA disaster loans and everything. I mean, it's been nonstop for the past 44 days. And, you know, aside from the pandemic, we deal with all of the fisheries management issues. We still are attending via, you know, webinars, New England Fishery Management Council meetings, Atlantic States Marine Fisheries meetings. And, you know, we are monitoring closely the right whale's departure from Cape Cod Bay. And, you know, we did get notice yesterday that there were two mother and calf pairs earlier last weekend, and they have left the bay, which is a good sign that the closure extension would be lifted. So we're hopeful that all these measures that have been put in place for the right whale conservation will continue to work, and we'll see increasing numbers.
Exactly. I know the right whales were up here on the North Shore off of Nahant and Swampscott just several weeks ago. Yeah.
Yep. And there's no crystal ball when it comes to where they're going to be, when they're going to be. And, you know, as a fishing organization representative, it's quite frustrating to have no predictability as to when and where things are going to happen. And the ocean is a fluid environment, and the right whales will go where they want to go, when they want to go. And, you know, all we can do is mitigate any interactions. And Massachusetts lobstermen are under the most restrictive conservation rules anywhere in the world, period. And, you know, they have been under those measures for the last 6 years. And, you know, it gets quite daunting and frustrating, to say the least, when all their efforts feel for naught, and there's continual interactions, you know, sometimes devastating interactions to the north of the border, let's say in Canada, and yet our fishermen are still feeling and paying the price for those interactions. So, you know, as a fishing organization, we walk the fine line to try to educate our members and also advocate for them to be able to fish.
Got it. Beth, anything else to share with us as from the Mass Lobstermen Association or anything else you want to reemphasize at all?
Well, yeah, more reemphasize. And, you know, we do a lot of outreach and educational talks and promotional events where, you know, seafood is highlighted. And again, you know, if you're thinking about buying seafood, think about where it comes from, how it's raised. Most of the seafood consumed is farm-raised. And right here in New England, we have access to locally harvested wild seafood, and it is some of the cleanest protein you'll ever get. So as we like to say, from our pot to your plate, everyone be well and stay safe.
Beth, thank you so much for your time, and best of luck with that, and of course your membership as well. Well, we need that. We need the lobstermen working hard this summer for sure.
Thank you very much, Bill, for having me, and we'll put everything up on our website, lobstermen.com.
And we will link to it as well. Again, that's Beth Cassoni, the executive director of Massachusetts, the Massachusetts Lobstermen Association. It's a Friday morning, and you, my friends, are listening to Connections. Rick?
All right, we're talking now with Arts Abound owner Sue Wheeler, who's a shop. I want to call it a studio. What should I call it, Sue? A studio, a shop? What is it?
It's an art gallery and gift boutique. I sell framed artwork, you know, original pieces that I have done and a few other local artists have done, and we also have local photography. But then it's also a gift boutique. I have handcrafted items from, I think, 17 different artists now all over, you know, this area.
Okay, all right, hold on. Let's get into that, because I don't want to rush this thing, and I don't want to go past this stuff too fast. I know that you're located on Lexington Avenue in Magnolia, and I'm reminded of a song that Kenny Rogers did. I think it was back in the 70s or 80s when he came out with "You Picked a Fine Time to Leave Me, Lucille," and it seems to me you picked a fine time to open a business.
Yes, indeed. I have only been open since November, and I had a pretty good holiday season, and then everybody told me it would be slow, you know, for the first few months of the year, and so I was just gearing up.
Oh man, I know.
It was over.
Well, you've been amazingly resilient, and I want to get to that, but first tell me a little bit about the idea of the gallery and boutique, and how you came up with it, and maybe the creativity in putting this thing together, because it seems pretty diverse, and it seems to have to hold an interest to a lot of people.
Yes, it is very diverse. I've done that on purpose. I have a lot of different types of art. The idea was that I would showcase local art and, you know, bring art to Magnolia, because we've got it in Gloucester, downtown Gloucester, and Rockford, so I wanted to have some in Magnolia. And originally I was just going to have my items, but then I quickly realized it would be much more interesting for the public to have, you know, local art from all kinds of artists. So, and my mother has lived in Magnolia for 40 years, and she's elderly, so I wanted to be closer to her mm-hmm. when I moved up here.
I think in looking at the website in particular, Sue, it's chock full of things, and I want to start off maybe with the topics here that you can maybe expand on a little bit. The very first tab is called Featured Artist. So what does that mean with respect to your boutique?
Well, every the thought was, well, before all this happened, was every month or 6 weeks or so, I am going to switch out the featured artist so that people can see different types of art. So right now I have somebody called Carrie Fracken, and she has done pastels and mosaics and that kind of thing. My next one was going to be John Abbey, who is a local photographer that that many people around the area know. And the thought is that it gets him to showcase his work. Other people can see his work, and I would have a artist reception, you know, for each of these people.
That sounds cool. And what about, now what is it that you design or make or create?
Well, I am a graphic designer by trade. I have been doing graphic design for corporations and for small businesses for about 25 years now, in marketing and promotions. So that is what I have been doing, but I'm, as a serious hobby and passion, I create art. And so there's, as I said, there's some of my art here as well. So, yeah, and then I kind of manage the whole thing. It's I am the owner, so everybody gets, it's not really an artist co-op. People get commissions when they sell. the work. Mm-hmm. So what I'm doing for the store is I do everything really, from making curtains to vacuuming to website to, finding artists, social media, all of that.
This sounds like a great conduit for so many different activities for artists, photographers, and things like that. And the other thing I'm just noticing is you also do graphic design, so you've got logos that you've designed and T-shirts and posters and all kinds of great stuff.
Yes, I've done all kinds of things. I've done quite a bit for nonprofits. It's always fun. I have a real passion for nonprofits, and I like to donate my time and donate my items to them.
Well, one of the things...
Actually some of that now with the mask. I've been donating to hospitals, and I'm about to donate some to Open Door, things like that.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about the masks, because that was on Discover Gloucester promotion as well. And right now, they are... popular is the wrong word to use, but we got tired of wearing, obviously, the old... We had these old masks that we bought years and years ago when we were sanding the house. So they're 100 years old. We got tired of wearing those, and we're looking, to find something a little more stylish, I guess. And you, mm-hmm. are you selling those to the public as well as donating to the needs?
Yes, I've been selling quite a few. Yeah, it's just me sewing them, and then my mother helps with, ironing and clipping the threads, and my niece helps with cutting the fabric, and she just comes up, once or twice a week. It's been busy, and I guess I was just reading yesterday, there's somewhere in Massachusetts nearby, it might be Peabody, somewhere like that, that's charging $1,000 fine if you don't have a mask.
Oh, yeah.
So, another... I think it's Lawrence is charging $300 fine.
Yep.
So
Lawrence Amesbury.
So
yeah.
Yeah. I don't see the mask business going away anytime soon, because I think people are going to realize quickly that they need more than one. Two or three is better, because one's going to be in the wash or one's going to be at work or whatever.
All right. Well, let's sell some masks along with some art. Now, how can people get hold of you to buy? At this point, I assume that you're open maybe for a sidewalk delivery or something or other?
Yes, I do curbside.
Curbside, yeah.
I try to be in the shop when people are coming to pick up, but if I'm not, I leave it in the mailbox for them.
Okay, so how do people do this? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
They should email me at artsaboundmagnolia@gmail.com.
artsaboundmagnolia@gmail.com. Okay, and also I should point out that Sue has a terrific website called artsaboundmagnolia.com, and all kinds of information there for anybody who would be interested in that. We will certainly link to that. So this is great. It sounds like it's an exciting time for you. I know it's a difficult time as well, but also this is you're just getting started with respect to this endeavor. And is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about before I let you go?
I just encourage people to buy local. I think supporting, the local artists is really important, not just myself, obviously, but all the artists I have here. I have gift baskets available for Mother's Day or for any, birthdays, anything, and I'm happy to ship them. I just really think it's an important time to buy local and, because we want these stores to stay around, and the only way that's going to happen is they so. And I also want people to stay safe. That's the most important thing of all.
Absolutely. All right. That is graphic designer and artist Sue Wheeler, owner of Arts Abound on Lexington Avenue and Magnolia.
That will do it for us today on Connections. Along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Just a couple of notes. We have the sports writers from the Salem News that... podcast or video cast, whatever it will be. The Zoom will be up this weekend, so the Salem News sports writers will be joining us. And Rick, there's more sports and just days away, right?
Yeah, just days away. Monday, of course, 7 to 8, we'll have Tim Kearns co-hosting and our usual cast of characters.
That is North Shore Sports Night. So in the meantime, do check back on the website, spread the word, follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at MSO News Sports, and a special thanks to all of our guests that joined us today. Have a great weekend, and enjoy the weekend ahead. And again, with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell on Connections.